Welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, guilty of dropping a joke before coming on the air, and that's why we're always kind of laughing when the show rolls in sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes
you'll notice that in the archive or our live, but we try to keep our sense of humor in the face of everything.
See? Yeah, there's a lot to keep our sense of humor about. Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast on Podbean, iTunes, or Stitcher. Today we'll talk about why the LCBO might be going on strike at the start of next week. OPSU, who represents liquor store workers, will be ready to picket at 12.01 a.m. on June 26th. But do you know why? We do. Then we'll blaspheme without fear of arrest by talking about why it's okay in Canada to blaspheme after the law against was shuffled off the books in Canada. Why is this secular move so rare? And then finally... speaking of secular, is it time for one school system in Ontario? That's been there's been a surprising number of calls lately to take the plunge, but might it end up being an election issue? The election is, of course, less than 1 year away. But first, speaking of elections, what an election it was. Theresa May was supposed to clean the house with the tears of moderate Labour politicians crying about how Jeremy Corbyn lost them the election. But what a difference a snap election makes, Scotty.
Oh, absolutely. There's shock in the nation, not just the UK, but everywhere.
Yeah.
That the Conservative and Unionist Party, as they're officially called, really, really tanked. The winner, even though he wasn't the winner, because there was no clear winner, was declared to be Jeremy Corbyn because they... what was the increase? It was the highest increase in a vote for a party in the UK since 1945, which was a Labour sweep after the war when they got rid of the Churchill. I think that was a unionist government as well.
Yep.
It seems everything is unionist these days because the Conservative and Unionist Party can't be the government without some help from some Northern Irish MPs. The Democratic Unionist Party, who are probably the most total throwbacks of anybody that's going to sit in Westminster or does sit in Westminster. If you thought Canadian social conservatives were retro, I think this crew has them beat. They're denying this, of course, but the quotes and the tweets don't go away. And some of the stuff that they said over the years, I mean, they hate the usual stuff. Some of you who are old enough will remember the founder of the Democratic Unionist Party, Reverend Ian Paisley, who was notorious for his fiery speeches. And, of course, comedians had a heyday with him because he was just so ridiculous. Mind you, did come around eventually and was part of the Good Friday Peace Accord in, I believe it was, 97. And helped orchestrate that, or at least eased it through. But, of course, the party has still kept their kind of base, which is just a hatred of all things Catholic and you name it. So... the Conservatives to govern are going to have this sectarian group to prop them up. Will it last? We're not sure. And I wasn't sure. Did you hear today? They were supposed to announce the government officially today, but the fire in London postponed that. So I'm not sure whether it was postponed for a day or just to the afternoon. I didn't actually hear this afternoon. But
I haven't had a chance to follow because I've been on the road.
You've been a busy guy. Stories to follow. But...
but I know that the Queen's speech was delayed because it takes a while to, you know, let that goat parchment dry.
Was that true about it having to be written on, it's vellum, isn't it?
It's vellum, yeah.
It's true, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's one of those, we're going to talk about backwards laws a bit later in the program, but that sounds about right.
But these DUP guys are amazing. Because the Indy 100 blog, which is something the Independent does, had a listicle, 17 quotes from DUP politicians that are actually real. And I have some of them here. This is a great one from Marvin Story, who is the former education minister. This is a direct quote. "You're telling me that cosmic balls of dust gathered and there was an explosion. We've had lots of explosions in Northern Ireland, and I've never seen anything come out of that that was good."
Hmm.
So that was a comment about the Big Bang. This was his and then, you know,
he's one of these 4,000 year people, probably, isn't he?
Well, to get good segue, because Edwin Poots, who was an MLA for Logan Valley, he said in 2007, "My view of the Earth is that it's a young Earth. My view is that it was created in 4,000 BC, which, of course, is, you know, 4,000 plus 2,000, 6,000 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, these people are, I don't know, this is like, I was going to say this is like electing the Tea Party, but Tea Party people have been elected. But, you know, just think of like the kookiest kooks that, you know, sort of flush conservative fortunes in elections here in Canada. You know, the kind of people who are held up on the left as like being indicative of conservative politicians in terms of being anti-gay, anti-environment, anti-science, anti-evidence.
The first name that pops to mind is Stockwell Day in my view.
Okay.
Was known to hold similar.
Sure. But what the remarkable thing is, you know, that these are sort of the 10 that the conservatives are leaning on to get the agenda going. That, you know, with the 10 and the 317 conservative seats, that's 327, which is one more they needed to get a majority. The majority status was 326. So the whole point of this exercise was to give Theresa May a better bargaining position for Brexit, which it certainly did not. And even though they have this deal with the DUP, I would hardly call it a position of strength that they've hooked up with a number of people who moderate conservative politicians also think are probably whack jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, adding to that is the fact that no one else was going to team up with them. This is like a marriage of like the absolute closest convenience. Because, you know, you're not going to get SNP, you're not going to get LD, you're not going to get Labour, obviously. So it's a bizarre circumstance that she made the only deal she could. She painted herself into a corner, Theresa May. And then next week they have to go into Brexit negotiations. It's screwy. David Cameron said that they're going to have to hope for a soft Brexit. They're going to have to hope that the EU is going to take it easy on them, basically, that because clearly there was an upswell amongst and this is actually quite statistical, that youth between 18 and 24, between 65 and 72% voter turnout, which is way over and above 43% in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
So this was clearly blowback. And I'm not sure if it was just like because Corbyn was ended up being a magnetic figure, or if it was like bound to happen because of the Brexit blowback. But conservative politicians have to be shaking their head last week. Like, where did it all go wrong? And there are certainly a lot of theories, but this is definitely not the position they wanted to be in.
No, and they blew it in a lot of ways, in some of the usual ways, like Elizabeth May, Theresa May. I knew it was going to happen. It was bound to happen.
Everybody does it.
Theresa May skipped out on the debates. We saw that here as well, certain star candidates in the Conservative Party and last election, the one before, regularly skip debates just because.
Yeah.
And also her sort of strong and stable routine wore really, really thin.
Mm-hmm.
There didn't seem to be anything new there. And then, of course, there was as our guest, John Atkin, talked about on election night about the seniors tax and things like that that just obviously weren't catching the imagination. More of the same, more austerity. But it seems that the door-to-door campaigning, they called it the doorstep game, of one group in particular that backs Labour called Momentum, which is a sort of I would call it a coalition. It's Labour supporters, but it's more of a very grassroots organization. Got campaigners together, and, you know, rather than in Canada where you just kind of campaign in your town or whatever, they were dispatched all over the place talking to people at the door. And, you know, not necessarily... I saw a couple of the sort of momentum interactions, and it wasn't... It's a dialogue with people. It's not necessarily you must vote Labour. It was like, so we're presenting this. And it looks like it really, really made a difference because, like, what did they lose? They lost... Labour lost 5 seats, but they gained 28. And most of those were conservative seats. There's a lot of... I think Momentum's plan or approach to it was that they did some strong campaigning in ridings where the vote was close the last time.
Yeah.
So obviously strategically a good move because they gained 28. 6 of them, however, were from the SNP, which was a bit of a surprise. There was the SNP got a bit of a shakedown in Scotland, the Scottish National Party, and there were more conservatives elected and... There was two Liberal Democrat seats lost, and one was Nick. Oh my goodness, I've lost his name. The leader of the
right.
Oh my goodness, it was in the coalition with Cameron. He sort of got sent packing.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. I'm not terribly surprised by SNP. I mean, they're not explicitly about separation like the Bloc Québécois, but I mean, there came a time. And we saw it in 2011 where people who were Bloc Québécois voters kind of got fed up voting for basically a single-issue party and wanted to be part of the conversation again. They ended up going, by and large, to the NDP and then in the last election, the Liberals. So I think we're talking about people who... Nick Clegg.
And there's the bell.
Yes. Nick Clegg is the name we're looking Clegg. For, courtesy of Phil Ault, who just messaged me.
Thanks, Phil. We got the bell.
I think SNP, it's not terribly surprising. UKIP lost their one seat, worth pointing out.
Amen to that, in my opinion.
Sinn Féin has 7 seats, but Sinn Féin never sits in Westminster.
But there's been a rumor and possibility that Sinn Féin may sit at Westminster. And I don't know if this is just wishful thinking on certain people's part. They never have. It's actually part of their MO that they don't do that. But if there is the potential to have a grand coalition if this Conservative government fails, and I believe that it will... I don't think they can last. And if they're going to fail, they need to fail soon. As you had said about Brexit, you can't just sort of have this team start the negotiations and then have a completely different squad doing it. I mean,
crazy.
some of the bureaucratic types will be the same people, obviously. But, you know, the government is the government. And
the civil servant types. Yeah.
Hard versus soft and all of that. So it's not as if it would be a complete, you know, switcheroo of the people that are doing those negotiations. But sticking with Scotland again for a second, the leader... It's interesting in Scotland that the leaders of 3 of the parties are LGBT.
Yeah.
The Green Party, the Conservative Party, and the Labour Party. So this is the leaders of the devolved Scottish Parliament, and MPPs, I guess we'll call them, but it's MSP, Member of the Scottish Parliament.
Mm-hmm.
In particular, the Ruth Davidson, who's the leader of the Conservatives, is not happy at all with this arrangement with the DUP because she is a gay woman.
Yeah.
And she was asked a very direct question about the DUP, and she kind of shut the interview down because I had, you know, just bailed completely because it was like, oh, I'm not going to answer that. So that is, again, somebody who may be waiting to see what happens. And of course, there's the possibility too of defections and other conservatives that are just saying, you know, we don't want to be a part of that, like we see with some Republicans in the States who aren't particularly happy with Trump. There has been a leadership casualty, though. Tim Fannin of the Lib Dems, Liberal Democratic Party, stepped down, interestingly enough, over his beliefs. It was an implication that he was some kind of secret homophobe because he wouldn't answer the question directly as to whether he believed in gay marriage and the usual. And he did the political dodge, as he wouldn't actually say what he thinks about gay people or is it a sin. I think he was asked, is it a sin? Do you think this is a sin? And, you know, I don't even know that kind of question would come up here. I can't even recall somebody being asked that just by general... journalists in elections here. It's sort of a sidebar conversation, but this seemed to be a big thing. He probably was going to step down anyway, by the sounds of it, because they were crunched as well.
Well, in his defense, I'm also not sure if anyone here would ask the Prime Minister, what's the naughtiest thing you've ever done?
And it run through a wheat field.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Led to a great John Oliver line about calling him Thatcher in the Rye. But
He is the king, right? It's like we strive for that level of punnage. Jeez.
The whole episode, I mean, I actually watched the returns on BBC.
Me too.
And, there you go.
Apple TV version, but yeah.
No,
I watched it online?
I watched on the on my TV, but we have Bell 5.
Oh, lucky you. They won't give us that. Anyway. You have to be a new customer anyway to get the deal.
Yeah. But yeah, I was watching it, and I was up till about 1, I guess.
Die Hard.
Die Hard. Yeah, it was because they have the, like, on the hour, every like a bunch of new writings announced on the hour. It was great. And then I was also enjoying Members of the Raving Loony Party that every now and then.
And Mr. Fishfinger and Lord Buckethead.
Buckethead.
Glorious. I wish we had more of that here. And that guy, the guy that ran against Theresa May, that dressed like Elmo, he got 3 votes.
Yes.
That's the best. So that's him, his mom, and his girlfriend or his brother.
You know what's hilarious? I saw
a picture
of Theresa May coming out of her, I guess it was her polling place, and Elmo was there, and I'm like, is this somebody who's just like trolling her? And then I found Elmo was a candidate, which is weird. That's neither here nor there, I was watching, and it was funny watching, and then seeing Labor was up the whole time I was watching. I went to bed, and then got up the next morning, and then saw that the Conservatives had 317 to Labor 262. But Labor was up the whole night, and that was amazing to watch, and it made me wonder what would have happened last year. And you don't want to relitigate things, but it did make me wonder what would have happened if just enough Democrats had made Bernie Sanders the nominee. Would we have seen something similar?
It seems that Labour in the UK got help from the Bernie Sanders team on how to organize and organizing and doing this.
Right.
So it obviously made a difference somehow. Yeah. I mean, it's an element of the campaign, but the Sanders people, it sounds like whatever they were doing, just keep on doing it. Because
right. And I can't remember where I read it, but somebody was talking about, like, does the youth turnout, does that represent a generational shift? And so I'll be very interested to see if Democrats in the United States sort of learn the lesson of this. It's like, just to own who you are, mm-hmm. own being left, and own being progressive. And can that be a way to defeat Cheeto Real Estate Man in the White House?
Whoa.
I'm sorry.
He
was tweeting today about this is the greatest witch hunt in history. And it's like, no, it isn't. You clearly haven't heard of Salem.
Second greatest witch, it's never second greatest.
He would never
the best.
He would never accept second greatest. But no, it just makes me think all those people who, it's not about turning people. It's about the people who sat out in the sidelines. It's the people who always sit out and then gripe and moan about nothing ever changes. And whether that's Bernie or some other figure who emerges in sort of the Bernie vibe, like mm-hmm. Elizabeth Warren or something.
Yeah, somebody maybe not quite as, you know, doesn't use the S word with such regularity. Because it's America. It's still a dirty word. Liberals are dirty.
I don't know.
It could be changing. The times
you could change, because I would never have thought that a mainstream politician would ever use socialist in the United States. That was pretty amazing.
And people seemed okay with it for the most part, except for the usual suspects.
The lesson here is, like, as soon as you start writing off somebody is the minute they start being relevant. And that was the thing.
Yeah.
Is Jeremy Corbyn was under the bus almost the whole time by the mainstream, the media, centrist labor people who were like, oh, I just got to get this election over with. I'm going to get Corbyn out of here. And now he's like working class hero.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's
something
to be said about that. Yeah.
Yes.
We do have to move on because I didn't want to give this story some attention, because when you see it on the news, they phrase it as, you better stock up because LCBO might be going on strike and you won't be able to get liquor. What's wrong with them? It's almost Canada Day.
Like, you sound like a freshman girl. Yes.
That's the point. Like,
I can't get my mojito mix. Yeah.
the coverage of this has been infuriating.
Yes.
If you see it on TV, because you have no idea what it's about. You go to I finally found out by clicking on a CBC article, but yet Lord knows you had to scroll past the Canadians are worried that they're going to have to stock up during the long, for in advance of the long weekend, because they might not be able to get their liquor. And I'm just like, how about the people who are going to be on strike and won't have a paycheck over the long
weekend?
Exactly.
I honestly think that story is always a plant, because as we know.
Oh, and Smokey said so.
Did he say that?
There was a press release yesterday from.
I honestly did not see that press release, even though I normally see them. But
yeah, OPSU president Warren Smokey Thomas, he accused the LCBO of playing upon quote unquote public anxiety, because apparently the LCBO has been bringing in extra stock in anticipation for a run on if the employees do go on strike,
which they stick in the end of the aisle, which is unsafe.
Exactly.
But anyway, which is another argument that they have.
Yeah.
I had an hour long drive on the weekend, and it's one of the news stations. I won't name them. One of the 10 on the 10 traffic on the 10s, but on the 10s on the weekend, it was the LCBO might be on strike. We've got, your Canada Day may be dry. And I'm thinking, okay, Canada is like 3 weeks away.
Yeah.
If you can't plan your booze needs, then there's probably something wrong with your booze needs.
There's also the wine shop and select and grocery stores.
It's not as if it's the province. It's not as if Prohibition is coming back and they'd be smashing kegs in the middle of the road. And that's and that's what's not weird about it, but they did do them. They made a ton of money the last time when there was the threat of a strike.
Yeah.
Now, this, we break it down. The LCBO is really one of the only retail divisions of the Ontario government, right? Mm-hmm. They're one of the only segments that sells stuff. Everybody else, it just is sort of glommed together in that public service group, who it seems this week have settled. And not too badly either. The rest of the public service, so obviously workers, so anywhere you go, there are exceptions like the privatized Service Ontario offices and that, which is another story I know itself. 7.5% over 4 years, and Labour Peace, which will come over the coming election period. So they've taken the majority of the OPSU people at the government level and settle with them because they don't want any hassles when elections coming. We're seeing it now, the stuff that's getting thrown out there that's just everybody's going, wow, this is the best NDP government we've ever had.
Yeah.
Right? So...
Well, I did read the press release for that and it had Liz Sandals' quote on that, and you could practically hear her giving out high fives as dictating this to her assistant.
But she also said... The government is no longer insisting on deals that come at no additional cost to the Treasury, which is stressful and expensive.
Yeah.
So complete 180, complete change of tune. Because before it's like, oh, well, we need to fiscal this and that.
Yeah.
The exception being the we'll call them the poor cousins, I guess, in the LCBO, who always get kind of beat on. You hear these things saying, oh, they make $27 an hour. I have somebody on the inside, we'll call them Whiskey Jack, who says that only a few people make that level because it's like any pay scale. There are people at the top of that scale and there are people at the bottom. And it would seem that there are way more people at the bottom of that scale than there are at the top. They don't have vacation. They don't have benefits. They have this pool of casual labor that are really, really running the show. And these... full-time jobs that were announced, I think it came out of an arbitration somewhere of 200. If you want one of those jobs and you're in the system, you may have to travel for it. So if you're from, let's say you are from Guelph, and a full-time position becomes available at Windsor and you're capable of doing that job, you have to pack up and move to Windsor. It's ridiculous. So
and really, no one's going to move 4 hours down the road for a retail job because it's a full-time opportunity either.
I guess with that comes all of the benefits and all of those things. I mean, maybe if it was a case of you were just starting out or something, but there's a lot of people toiling away at LCBOs.
Depends how far you want to go in the LCBO. If you want to get into management or something, you might want to do that. But it does seem like crazy to, if you're to relocate yourself to be at a clerk somewhere else.
Sure.
According to OPSU, 84% of the LCBO is part-time, so that's what you're
that's massive.
What we're talking about.
Yeah.
Smokey Thomas said that he was aware of one person who worked like 90 days in a row, 4 hours a day. So it's not like this person could not have been given 8 hours for 5 days a week, which would be full-time hours. It just, because of how labor laws work, if we can give you 40 hours a week, then that makes you a full-time employee, which brings with it other rules and caveats and exceptions.
The tipping point, they have to pay overtime.
Right. So it's they're getting a lot of work out of people, probably more work than they would otherwise if they had made them full-time. But here comes Kathleen Wynne, who says it's a good idea for the province to lead on labor standards and wages. And it's like, well, you're failing on couple levels there, Premier. If you have people working 3 months for 4 hours a day. That's
or
really
2 hours a day. I mean, they schedule 2-hour shifts in some places as well.
And it's really hard to live your life around that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, you make $27 an hour. Like, yeah, you're working 2 hours a day. You know, multiply that by a year. You're still in the poverty line, right? It's not as you're below it.
And that kind of, that kind of talk ticks me off too, because we're talking about, you know, the minimum wage raise to $15. And people talk about, you know, people who stock shelves and work as a cashier, talking like they're lazy, like they deserve to be paid pauper's wages. It's like, clearly you have never stocked a shelf. You have never stood at a cash register for hours on end, because otherwise you would know. I'm not saying that $27 an hour is great, is you know, monopoly money or like top of the line pay for a job as a clerk, but it's not like it's, you know, lazy work either.
No, but at $27 an hour with nothing else at all behind it, isn't that great?
No.
You know, there probably are people that would take 15, 16, 17 if it meant, you know, you could maybe get some money off getting your teeth fixed, knocked off, right? Or you know, those kind of perks, let's say, or, you know, additional compensation that would make up for it. And you know, that is the kind of thing where there should be some decisions made. But if you're in that pool of temps and part-time, then it just isn't going to happen.
But the argument never ends either. Yeah. It's, you know, well, I can find somebody who worked for 27. I can find someone who can work for 15. I can find someone who worked for 10. You can find someone who will work for $5 an hour. I mean, you take in the entirety of the world, you can find someone who you can say, do you want to make $5 an hour? And they'll be like, oh, hell yeah, that's a fortune.
Sure. But that's that whole, yeah, you should feel lucky you've got a job kind of approach to it. And it really needs a bit more analysis than that. So,
yeah. So we wanted to talk about this basically because if it comes up on the news in the next couple of days again, because the strike deadline is on the 26th. And these people have been working without a new contract since March 31st.
Yep.
So they've been working 3 months. It's been a very ambiguous period. Uncertain about, you know, whether or not they'll have to go on strike. And then you have the news media basically boiling this down to the lowest common denominator. And I was talking to somebody about this today at the Poverty Symposium, how when you see LRT coverage on the news about LRT construction, it's all about the delays and traffic congestion and how it's, you know, ruining businesses along the corridor. And what you never hear our stories are, how is the LRT going to help working people? How is it going to help alleviate that congestion? How rare it is for such a huge infrastructure project to be done in this day and age, where, you know, we have such huge infrastructure development gaps and infrastructure deficits. You never hear the other side of the story, and it's very much the same with the LCBO potential job action. It's all about, you might not be able to get a drink on Canada Day, and it's not about, well, what is this strike about?
Well, it sounds like they're going to be open longer on the day after Canada Day, so possibly if they're not out, but we shall see. Do you want to talk just a little bit about the Poverty Symposium and where your stuff will be available regarding that, since you mentioned it? You were at the Poverty Symposium today. What have you got planned?
Well,
if anything. You just went.
I did go to...
Sorry to put you on the hot seat there.
It's all right. I sat on a panel talking about how media is part of the solution to reporting on poverty issues. I am working on covering more poverty issues as a consequence of what we talked about a few weeks ago in that Golf Today column I wrote. So there's going to be some stuff coming up. It is a huge topic, and I have talked to a couple of people already about where and how to start. And the only thing it affirmed to me is that it's bigger than even I thought it was. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be something on Guelph Politico shortly about what direction that's going to go into, so stay tuned for that. But the Poverty Symposium was great, and I think it was recorded, so it may end up on YouTube at some point, my panel, and I will...
Let us know.
I will let people know on our social media stuff when that happens.
Fantastic.
Okay, so we're going to take a break and then come back and talk about blaspheming, because...
Holy!
When you think... Yeah. Blank. When you think of open sources, you think blaspheming. And you're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Hi, I'm Otis, and you are listening to CFRU 93.3 FM.
Does need no introduction. That was a variation on the Batman theme. That was the Batusi Agogo, or I Shouldn't Wish to Attract Attention, from the exclusive original television soundtrack album of Batman. Of course, we lost Adam West this week. Pure West.
Yeah.
Aged Adam. How old is he? 80? Late 80s?
Oh, I don't know off the top of my head.
Ageless and Timeless Adam West. My God, I love that show. In rerun, of course, and the music, I think our long tradition of playing instrumentals in this show may be an echo of my exposure to Spider-Man and that show back in the day. So there you go. There's our musical origins in 10 seconds or less. So
he was 88.
88.
And I saw him last fall at Fan Expo. It was supposed to be his last Canadian appearance because he was getting on in years. And
still giving her, eh? That's right.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's...
Did you meet him or you saw him?
It was like the Q&As that they do, and I was like in pretty close to the front row. There was some pretty good... I retweeted the post I did of it for Nerd Bastards last year, but it was him and Burt Ward, and I guess Adam West, because he was older and he was also fighting leukemia. I'm not sure if he had leukemia.
Oh, I didn't know. That's right. He did pass away then.
If he had been diagnosed at that point, because it was like relatively short fight, but him and Burt Ward were there. I mean, they didn't show any signs that they were slowing down. Although I can't imagine. I mean, I go to those things and I cover them, you know, from beginning to end.
You're wiped, yeah.
And I'm wiped, so I can't imagine what it's like for them. But yeah, it's too bad. And there's unfortunately not that many people from that show left. You know, Burt Ward, Eartha Kitt, I think are about
it. Gordon, yeah. Probably gone.
Commissioner Gordon is definitely gone. Yes. Commissioner Gordon
was ancient back then. Yeah. 50 years ago, he was 75. So he's...
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
The Batman.
Speaking of heaven, Canada this week passed Bill, the House of Commons, I should say, passed Bill C-51, which was called Cleaning up the Criminal Code, Clarifying and Strengthening Sexual Assault Law, and Strengthening the Charter.
That was the full name.
That was the full name of
it. Sounds antiquated already.
I know, right? So they threw out things about challenging people to a duel, which doesn't happen that much anymore.
I challenge you to.
It was also, it's no longer illegal to possess or publish crime comics, which I think is weird.
That was my favorite one of the list. It was like,
well, it's because isn't every superhero comic a crime comic?
Here, Adam, here's this crime comic. Ooh, you broke the law.
I mean, I was in big trouble until this past Wednesday because of all the comic books I own. And then here's my favorite. Fraudulent pretending to practice witchcraft, which, I mean, the only way you're not breaking that law is if you have actual magical powers, right?
Yeah.
Like if you're Harry Potter, you're not breaking this law, but if you're, you know, the people from, you know, Now You See Me, you're, it's, right?
I bet the backstory in some of these laws is incredible. Like how, if you read deeply into the legal books as to why they came about, it generally like a case by case, like a one, there was a time where, and it still happens, where like one particular case will change the law. It's like, we have to change this law.
Yeah.
And I think that's what happened with the blasphemy law.
It's not even that old. It was like from 1892. I mean, which is like, yeah, 100 some odd years ago, 125 years ago. But it was only used, the last time it was used, it was 1927. And somebody was sentenced to 60 days in prison. I saw a little bit on that
because the dates were sort of off, but there was an Anglican reverend found guilty for, he put up some posters that were anti-Catholic on his church in Montreal, and he was the one that did time. And then somebody tried to use this law on Life of Brian in 1980 in Sault Ste. Marie.
In the Sioux, yeah.
And it failed.
That must be an interesting story.
And I bet. Sue's an interesting place. Spent some time up there, let me tell you. And it didn't go anywhere. So it's now history. It's interesting you mentched about cleaning up the charter because the first thing I thought of when I heard that.
Well, strengthening the charter.
Strengthening the charter.
Cleaning the criminal code, strengthening the charter.
Well, they should strengthen the charter by getting God out of the preamble, in my view, but that's probably a topic for another day. Is it blasphemy to say that, Adam? I'm not sure. Not really.
That
line about recognizing the supremacy of God, I might not fly.
That would be up to the police, but.
I guess so.
What I find interesting about this is not the Canadian side of it, but the fact that the fact that it was on the books. I mean, there are a ton of crazy laws that aren't on the books. Like, I think it's still on the books in Toronto that if you pull up to the Royal York with a horse, they have to stable the horse. They have to provide provisions for the horse. I'm not 100% sure if that's still a law, but it was.
We should try it.
But when I took law in high school, that was one of the things the law teacher mentioned laws that aren't on the books.
Don't throw your peanut shells on the road.
Right.
All this stuff like that. Yeah.
But Amnesty International is very interested in this topic of countries that use blasphemy laws to basically persecute religious minorities, and they had a map you can look at where it shows where there are still blasphemy laws, and Canada was lit up. I'm not sure if they've changed the map yet, but
we might have been blowing a yellow. I don't know about red.
Well, it was in
those countries where they kill you, right?
There was red countries for where you were put to death for blasphemy.
Saudi Arabia.
And there was orange countries where you can be, you know, jailed or fined, and we were in orange. And there was one yellow country, which was Australia, because there was, I think that was for fines. It is kind of disturbing. And we saw a case of this in Pakistan this week. A man, and it almost sounds like entrapment a bit. He was accused of showing somebody at a bus terminal blasphemous material on his phone. I couldn't find out what the blasphemous material was. But then later on Facebook, he becomes engaged in a conversation with somebody who ended up being a government official.
Oh, he was baited, I guess. Eh?
Yeah, it seems a bit like blasphemy catfishing, bizarrely enough. But Pakistan is one of these places where blasphemy... I mean, we almost...
Death.
We almost consider it blasphemy. It's like, it's a joke. Oh, you're charged with blasphemy. But it's serious business in these places.
It sounds old-fashioned just to say it. They blaspheme.
Yeah.
Blasphemous libel, I think, was the actual charge, right? So you're slandering the Lord. Another place is Iran, which would blow a red as well. Now, funny enough, the Christian faith does specify what the punishment for blasphemy is, and that is death.
Mm-hmm.
It's in Leviticus, and I think the Jewish faith also defaults to Leviticus because it's Old Testament. So
source of
stoning,
so many
actually, it's stoning. So according to biblical law, you're supposed to be stoned. Interestingly, the Quran does not specify the punishment for blasphemy, but under Sharia, which I guess is subject to interpretation, like any faith, and that's where we get the laws of. Do they still use stoning in some places? Beheading is the default in Saudi Arabia, isn't
it? Oh, no, they still use stoning.
Stoning is still...
Yeah.
Officially use stoning, or is it unofficial, like torches and, you know, get the monster?
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah, we should find that out.
I know that stoning is used. It seems like if you don't... In cases where they don't just want to, like, execute people, but, like, torture them
in the
process. It's
like, you had relations with somebody that wasn't your husband? Stoning... Right.
Yeah, it seems to be especially targeted at women because
surprise.
It's not much of a surprise. But yeah, it is still used. And it's not isolated either. Like, Ireland had to look at its blasphemy laws. When, like, somebody goes to investigate Stephen Fry, a comedian, noted atheist, because a lot of his comedy is based in his atheism, you know, goes on Irish TV and says, like, if this is an intelligently designed universe, then God's a maniac.
It's probably a Democratic Unionist Party supporter.
I would not be surprised.
He's blaspheming.
And then in Denmark...
And he's gay, too. That doesn't help, right?
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, so it's double whammy.
Double whammy. Hilarious guy, though. I love Stephen.
Oh, absolutely. Sharp as anything.
And then... he was the UK PM in the last 24 series featuring Kiefer Sutherland.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Good times. But then in Denmark, there was a man who was going to be put on trial for burning a Quran. And then I guess there was such an outrage about putting someone on trial for burning a book and to make a political statement that Denmark repealed their blaspheme laws. I mean, that was just this past week, too. But it took that... that
initiative.
As the
driver. Yeah.
Right. It strikes me as bizarre it was still in the books, but it strikes me as especially bizarre in these two cases that someone would access those laws. Because it should come as no surprise to anyone in the West that, you know, these are increasingly secular societies. Where, you know, and even people who say they're religious, they're not every week churchgoers.
And they're not going to be stoning anybody that blasphemes either.
No.
At least not in this country.
Right, exactly.
But and it also sounds like I got a bit of that this was prompted by a petition that was making the rounds. Like,
yeah.
Presented to Parliament saying, you know, I think one of the people behind it was there, or the groups behind it was the Canadian Secular Alliance, who had all these statistics about the countries that still have blasphemy laws. I think it was 55 countries, and of course there's six still with the death penalty.
Yeah.
And they were like, this is just plain ridiculous. So I think that's how it got back on the radar. So there's some proof, people, that petitions do actually work sometimes for stuff like this.
Well, yeah, and it's true, and it's company we do not want to be in this sense, because you're talking about Russia, oddly enough. You're talking about India, pretty much everywhere in Northern Africa and the Middle East. You know, these are countries when it comes to, you know, how well people are treated. We do not want to be in the same category as, even if we haven't charged somebody with blasphemy for 75 years, it's still not good optics. So,
well, you don't have to worry now. For God's sakes.
Yeah.
That's not blasphemy, is it?
Well,
that's more of an interjection. I don't know. Is there an interjection law?
I hope not. That seems like that. I mean, we can talk about small government, we can talk big government, but if we're talking about making laws about interjections, that's big government.
I object. There we go.
Yeah, so there we go.
In the name of the Lord.
This this segues nicely into a surprising debate that's come up. And it kind of happened. I didn't look at the dates on the articles, but it seemed, but they both appeared within a day of each other. And I thought, well, this is interesting, because he had a Globe and Mail article by Marcus G. Called Toronto Needs a Single Secular School System. And then there was another article on a website called Insaga, which is kind of like a Guelph Today kind of site for Mississauga. And a man named Alan King, who pretty much wrote the same headline. You know, Mississauga needs one, you know, secular school system. And what's weird is it almost feels like it's coming up to a mainstream debate now, when I think in the last provincial election, this was like a Green Party-led initiative.
I believe that's been Green Party policy probably since the beginning, or close.
But Green
to
Party
it.
Was the one talking. And
they're the only
when
ones.
We had were we doing this show then? No, we weren't doing this show.
We've definitely discussed it at some point. I don't know if it was then or now.
I think I brought it up on some podcasts with other candidates too. But yeah, it was very under the radar, and it's kind of like it was not a main issue at all. But now we have a group called OPEN, which stands for One Public Education Now, who are crowdfunding to bring a constitutional case to hopefully go all the way up to the Supreme Court, because the argument is that this is a constitutional matter, that we can't unsegregate the school systems because the Constitution demands that we have Catholic and separate school boards.
Which isn't completely true.
Right.
that, I mean, it is in the Constitution, and of course the argument is, well, I can't change the Constitution, it's too hard. it always is the argument. So back in...
Stuff's hard, guys.
Yeah, it goes back to the... there's a line in the BNA Act about the... it was actually designed to protect minority rights. So the Roman Catholics, as they called them back then, and still Roman Catholics, I guess, the Roman Catholic population, and the Protestant population in Quebec and the Roman Catholic population in Ontario would be taken care of in terms of their education.
Yep.
So Quebec is the prime example, because they are mentioned in this, specifically Upper and Lower Canada, right? So the Quebec Education Act in the 80s, they asked for and got an exemption, which was granted years later, and it was kind of designed to sort of quiet down all the faiths whining, saying, we want this school, we want full funding. And I mean, you name the faith, they'll be like, we want money too, which doesn't happen in Ontario and or Quebec. So they came up with this course that called the Ethics and Religious Culture course, that sort of placated those who are saying, oh, you're not talking about religion at all, but pulled it out of it. It effectively changed the curriculum enough that the old system was abolished to some degree. It's not, it's, you know, the mechanisms, I think, are still there, but it's sort of like their way of rubbing it out. Newfoundland got rid of it completely. Yep. Now, mind you, Newfoundland came way later. They weren't mentioned in this law. Newfoundland was 1949. Mm-hmm. And they pretty much got rid of the Catholic system, because what happened with the Christian Brothers and the system of abuse that went on was very similar to residential schools. Yep. Just get rid of it. And they did, thankfully, in my view, was a very good idea. But you see this, and I've talked about this before, I think, the example years ago when in Mississauga, where I grew up, they built out in what was the country then, two brand spanking new board offices, nearly identical, one for the Catholic system and one for the public system, aka the Protestant system. And anybody looking at that, you're driving up Highway 10, it's the country, it's like, wow, that seems like a lot of redundancy. I wasn't very old when that happened. Teenager, and I was in high school. I was like, this seems ridiculous, because you have two of everything. I guess technically in Ontario, we have four if you include the language, you know, Catholic French and Protestant French, which I think I couldn't even name a Protestant French school.
Mm.
There's got to be... The phone's going to start ringing probably. How don't you know this? But
well, not only talking to two people who don't have kids.
Duplication of everything in this system. And what is the basis? The basis is the Catholic faith. And it just seems so... Marcus G. called it a glaring anachronism. Yeah. And he's absolutely correct.
Well, he made the point of the City Place development in Toronto, where they're building two schools that will service this area, one Catholic, one separate. And it seems kind of crazy, because I know there are places in the province where there are Catholic schools that are half empty and separate schools that are bringing in portables.
Yep.
There are other kind of infrastructural problems too, like French teachers. French teachers is an enormous problem in Ontario education. Not that the French teachers themselves are a problem, but they have more positions than teachers. So instead of splitting your French teachers four ways, wouldn't it be easier? Like, would we have enough French teachers if it was one school? Probably not. But still, it's worth considering.
Well, I think if the structural change was made, then you could channel people toward that.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't have to have these like different... essentially four sets. And then I guess French immersion again within those systems is another subset, which Catholic doesn't have, but public does.
Mm-hmm.
So not only do you have the let's say the regular French teacher, but then you have an FI teacher with a different set of qualifications again. You're just splitting and splitting and splitting. If you want a bilingual nation, you want a bilingual province, then by all means, have a bilingual education embedded within the system. Now, and that's, I guess, a separate topic, but the Catholic school system, and I can't remember the exact date, it was a few years ago where there was a couple of brothers in a school, and there was a decision made that they did not have to attend religious services in a Catholic school.
Right.
The closest school to them, they wanted to go to that school, and the father said, I don't want them getting religious education. There was a dispute, and it was settled. They said, you don't have to go. But this past week, there was a human rights complaint settled.
I was going to mention that.
Yes, so there was a student who... they wouldn't give her an exemption in her final year from religious studies. Now, and she was 98% average. I mean, she's there to be a student, did not want to take religious courses. And it sounds like they were kind of turning the screws on and saying, well, you know, if you don't go to this, you're not going to be able to go to, I don't know if it was prom specifically, but there were other things kind of separate from religion classes and classes, extracurriculars, let's say.
Yeah, there's like a quid pro quo.
Yes. They said, well, if you don't do this, you're going to get this. It was pretty vindictive stuff, but it's like, you know, if you're getting a 98 average and anything else, why are you worried about your religion class? You're not, because you want to focus on stuff that actually has basis in reality,
in my opinion,
but you know what I mean.
And these cases get down to the crux of the matter, because if you're going to give out exemptions from religious study, then what's the point of having a religious school?
Precisely. You're done. If that's what's happening in your school, that you have kids that don't have to go to it, you're done. Now, I remember growing up, we had, this wouldn't happen now either, where it was... You did the anthem and the Lord's Prayer.
Yeah.
And that immediately excluded the Jehovah's Witnesses, because they don't do the anthem, and the Muslim kids in the class, because they don't, they're not Christian.
Right.
So it's all ended now. I don't think that happens. I think
that ended when I was like in grade one or two.
So they switched it to, well, it tells you how long ago I was in public school, but for a while it was like a moment of quiet contemplation. That's probably gone as well. It's just like, you know, just get down to the nitty gritty and do the studying, secular studying, which is probably the best idea, and let the faith take care of itself, not in that environment.
Yeah.
It's the same at work, right? You go to work, it's like, I guess depending on your job, maybe if you're not a priest, or if you are a priest. But beyond that, it's like, it's not an issue in the workplace. Why should it be in the school?
Well, and then there is the debate now about school boards who have allowed, school rooms and property be used for religious observances on Friday for Muslims.
And that was in Saga and Mississauga as well. There was a group of people that absolutely lost it that this was happening, even though it's been happening for years. I remember I was in night school with a guy who had to go into the stairwell and pray. No one minded. No one cared. And it was like, just you go do your thing. That's fine. But then they're whipping up this frenzy about, oh, the Muslims are getting this, the Muslims are getting that. It's like, It's accommodation, and that's one thing, and it's not detracting from studies, and it's one day a week.
Yeah.
It's not embedded, because what are they worried about? It's like, oh, we're going to have like Muslim education next. That ain't going to happen. If anything's going to happen, we are going to see a secular school system, and I am of the opinion that we should.
And you know
just
what?
Just financially, never mind the faith aspect of it.
And like, if you're the crazy sort who is worried about like Muslim schools, like teaching Sharia law and stuff, you know what would help that a lot? Just getting rid of any religious education at all. I mean, it sounds weird to like, let's placate the racist. But honestly, if we have no religious education at all, and just say like the point of school is to learn and to learn facts and to learn knowledge and not to be, you know, and not to learn about the good book, whatever your good book is.
School that's paid for by the public. If by all means, and I remember people going to catechism and things on Saturday or Sunday school that was to do with their faith, by all means do that. If you want to do it at 3:30 when school's over, if you want to study your faith, you know, constantly, please feel free, because it's well within your right. It's a human rights issue. Your faith is your faith, but it should be separated out. And this is like it's going to be an ongoing. I'm glad that this has bubbled to the surface. Wasn't there? And you probably saw it as well. There was a case where a woman could not get a job as a teacher because she wasn't Catholic.
Yes.
This is something else that sort of has come to the surface this past week.
Yes, I didn't look too deeply into that, but I am aware.
She's in the district, and she could not get a job. Fully qualified to do whatever because she was not of the Catholic faith. And that is a human rights issue as well.
And that's probably why OSSTF, the Ontario Secondary School Teachers Federation, is looking. They have a working group about merging the boards. And this is contentious for them, not because of the religious issue, but because combining boards will mean lost jobs.
Oh, it is political hot potato.
On the flip side, if open is to be believed, we're talking about $1.6 billion a year in savings, maybe even as much as maybe not that high. But
it would increase over time. I mean, there are people, obviously, that they would have to buy out, and there'd be attrition and shuffling around of people. It would definitely be an upheaval, but there's a way to do that. They've done it in other provinces, pretty much every other province.
Yep. It's been known to happen.
So why not Ontario?
Why not Ontario? Why not?
Maybe we can ask Mike Schreiner when he comes.
Good
on
segue.
The...
Mike Schreiner will be here on July the 6th, but before that, we will have Wellington Halton Hills MP Michael Chong in here next week, and then on July 29th, we welcome returning champion Ward 5 Councillor Kathy Downer. So Chong, Downer, and Schreiner.
And still champion.
In the next 3 weeks, and I was talking to Catherine McGarry, MPP of Cambridge, about coming in today.
Oh,
when I saw her at the symposium. She was there. I didn't get a chance to ask Diane Verneil because she was also there, but she bat out of hell after the panel. But
she said, Donaldson's coming. I better go.
She is a very nice lady.
Yes, that's true.
You can stay connected to Open Sources all week long because we're nice too. And that is at opensourcesguelph.com. You can stay connected to us on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire, at @OS_Guelph on the Twitters. And you can download our podcast on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or through iTunes or Stitcher. I will be heard next on CFRU on Wednesday at 8 a.m. for End Credits, which is a movie news and review show. You can connect with me on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter. I blog at a place called The Spanner Book, and there's a newish thing there if you want to check it out.
There was a newish thing.
Trying really hard. So spannerbook.wordpress.com.
And you can stay tuned for DJ Sounds Good to Me here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca. That's your Guelph campus and community radio station, and we will be back here next week for more Open Sources Thursday at 5 p.m., and we will see you then.